My name is Andrew Sakowitz. I work in professional services with my colleague Frank Pizzi. We work in professional services. What we want to do today is share with you our experiences, our practices, the tools, anecdotes, war stories, and we hope that you walk away from this session empowered to do some of these things by yourself, if not all of it. I've been with Esri for 16 years, and most of this time was traveling to different customer sites. And over the years, I learned that there are things, the repeated things, the things that we need to tune MXD, to monitor, to test. And doing this by hand, it was fun the first 100 times, but then it got old. So we will present the tools, the methodology, how do we do things today. So let's just dive in. What is performance? What is performance? What is scalability? It will help us understand how to tackle that. Performance actually is very easy to understand. It's how fast things are moving. I'll be using car analogy. So if you're driving 80, that's a good performance. If you have your Ferrari, maybe it's not, but still, 80 is good performance. You as a user, you want to travel on a freeway, an empty freeway. Freeway, maybe it's like 4 a.m., all the lanes to yourself, and you're just going as fast as possible. That's the best performance you can get on your system. But if you are paying for a WebGIS project, would you like to have all the lanes available to only one user? No. So the next term is scalability. So it has to be performance, but also has to be scalable. And then when we add more cars on the freeway, we want to make sure that we sustain this performance. And the same thing is with our WebGIS. When we have more users on the system, they still should enjoy similar performance to when they're only the only user on the system. Okay, so performance is inherently, it's user experience. Users are talking, my performance, how fast things are. Scalability is more of an admin. Administrators are defining how scalable the solution is. There is a concept of capacity. So we can go over the capacity. When we go over the capacity, it will be something like that. And we do not want to be in this situation, yes? But our solutions will behave, will have the same result as this traffic jam. Things are slow, things are jammed, they're not working. Whose fault is that? Well, sometimes nobody's fault. It just, we build the solution, and it's popular, and there are too many users, too many cars on the freeway, and we are here. So we want to allocate infrastructure to have this type of speed, yes? So either add all these lanes and move these cars somewhere else. And we will be using the same concept through WebGIS, and we'll dive into more technical and detailed definitions, but keep that in mind because it will help you have a intuitive understanding. All right, so we have lanes, we have cars, too many cars, it slows down. But they're toll booths, yes? So if we have all the lanes and not enough toll booths, well, that's not good either. So what are toll booths? What are lanes? In our WebGIS, let's think that these lanes are CPU processors, and you have this super 16-core machine, which are like 16 lanes, and you're ready to publish a service, and you right-click on the service, and you published, and the users come, and the performance is not there. So what happened? I assume that most of you are familiar with the concept of instances, map services, ArcGIS services have min and max instances. Min instance default is 1. And this instance, it's like tollboot. It's right here. So if you have all these 16 lanes on your freeway and you keep the default service 1, how many cars can travel through that freeway? There will be tollboot. There will be one tollboot open, yes? And this is something that if you have one service, you probably know intuitively, oh yeah, yeah, you know, it's 1 and 2. How many of you have more than 50 services that you're in charge of? How many of you have more than 100? 200? All righty. So if I ask you, can you just start with the alphabetical order, min and max instances for all your services? I doubt that you will be able to tell me. You need tools to help you understand. Also, the state of your freeway changes. Services are popular and they're not popular. So we will have conversation on these instances. But I want you to understand that we are dealing with, we need lanes, CPUs. We cannot have bottleneck instances, and only then we can have adequate performance. So we will be diving into a little bit more technical. And these Scooby-Doo cartoons that I put together also help me and hopefully you understand how the system behaves and then how to interpret these statistics, these utilizations. So now it's nice and easy, and I want you to enjoy that. It will help us. These steps are concurrent users, or maybe so as we are adding more users, performance start degrading. And at some point will degrade. Every system has the breaking point. There is nothing wrong with this. The concept of throughput is very helpful for us. Why is that? Why we prefer to talk about maps per second or per hour than number of concurrent users? Because users are not operating with the same frequency. So you might be very active user who just looks at the data all the time, and others, they will open a map and they will think about this for 30 minutes. So what we prefer to have these maps per hour, and the shape of this will be like this. When we look at the system, so this was from the user perspective, yes? How many users and what's the user performance? And now when we apply this load, we want to see how the system behaves. And there is CPU. And CPU is our number one statistic. We start analyzing CPU because most our operations are CPU bound. So it's like our oxygen. If we have it, we breathe. If we don't, we choke. And that's what we're looking at. And that's the shape of the curve. And at some point, we will reach the maximum CPU, and that's really the capacity of our system. You see, CPU kind of follows the throughput curve. And there's network the same. Memory should be relatively flat, unless there's a memory leak. So it's just a really a quick intro, so it will be easier for you to interpret the next slides. Now, can you visualize from the start a slide where is the capacity of the system and what step? Is it here? Is it here? Is it here maybe? Because when things level off, that's where the capacity is. And it's right here, it's capacity. It's 85%. I talked to one admin, and the admin says, we don't have capacity problem. We never run over 85% capacity. I say, okay, that's what you're telling me, that you're running at the capacity all the time. You actually, your engine didn't blow up, but you are overheating all the time. 85% is not a good number. It's not a good number. It's the red light with bells should, you know, ring for you. So if you're at the 85%, it's over capacity. And at that point, look at what happens. Look at what happens to the response time when you're over the capacity. So the throughput, it's the same, it's leveled, but the response time, all the users are starting experiencing significant performance degradation. And the phone starts ringing, and you will wonder what's going on. If you're over capacity, it's one of the simplest use cases for us to fix. We put the monitoring tool and we say you're 100% CPU, you need to add more machines or lower your load. That's very simple. It's simple if you have this information. If you just have a ringing phone, that's not that simple. So we use this to understand how to analyze the system. And we use these tools and process. We see performance as an asset. Performance is not for us some negative utility that we need to battle all the time. We see it as an asset, almost part of your functionality. Because if performance is good, users are happy, and we need to start early on. So this slide demonstrates project lifecycle. Now you're in a planning phase, you're gathering requirements, you're designing, developing, deploying, and you're in a production. You want to start early on. You want to have tools to design for performance. What could be a very simple decision, design for performance? Actually, one gentleman, I will not point at the gentleman, said that we have Oracle in one data center and ArcGIS Server in a different data center. And I would say that would be a design, maybe a flaw when you really want to have the best performance. They need to be next together. So build these data center close to each other. And it's not something the developer will decide. It has to be early on because it involves institutional decisions and roles and responsibility. Testing. I've heard this line. We don't test, but if we do, we test on production. That's not good. We need to have a test environment, and we need to start testing early on. If I use the car analogy, to be consistent, think about this. They were building a car, and we start with the engine. And the engine is hanging on the chain, and you say, well, we can't test because there are no wheels, no chassis, no body. I say, yes, exactly. There's an engine. We can test the engine. Just apply the pressure and test the engine. If the engine fails, the car will fail for sure. And we can start testing very early on when you're developing this application, when you publish services. It will be much easier for us to react. Then we go to deployment and production. Even though you do all the right things, you design the system very, very thoughtfully, things change. Things change, and you need to monitor, and you need to calibrate, and you need to adjust to that. So that's our best practices. If you ask our advice how to ensure the best performance in our system, I'd say start here and keep follow this, and that's how we mitigate risks. It may not ensure the adequate performance, but certainly will mitigate the risks. I understand that there are pros and cons. We can be proactive on in every project, it's very uncommon when we hear about performance problems when it's in the production. And even for that, we have solutions. So I'll get into it. These tools are kind of loosely connected. So think about this, that we're designing a new solution. Now, most of you have Esri technology. Maybe, started with ArcIMS, or maybe you're just adding Collector to your ArcGIS server. So it's very unlikely that we are dealing with just brand new solutions. So if there is a historical data, we like to use this data. These models, the empirical models, are much more accurate, much more available than just us rationalizing and going through the interview and say, so how do you envision your map will look? So if we have existing data, we can use it. We can, if you have existing map services or quickly prototype, we can profile them, and we can take these two information and plug it into our design tool and use these models, and it will produce much more accurate estimates in terms of infrastructure recommendation, like CPU, network, and others. So I hope you see this loosely coupled relationship between the tools. But they're just tools. They're just tools. You know, we shouldn't fool ourselves that if I can download this tool, it will answer all my questions. Not exactly. It comes with the knowledge, discipline, the patterns. So we need a little bit more than a tool. So let's talk about quickly ArcGIS Server options, because it's the web GIS. All of these have performance implications. And I'm not going to talk about just the architecture, but when it comes to best performance and stability, if you have a hardware load balancer, and these are the silos, I like this very much because these silos don't impact each other. So if you are willing to synchronize these silos, because if you publish here, it will not appear here. You need to synchronize. If I were the head of performance and scalability person, and I have a hardware load balancer and knowledge, I would pick this one. I like this very much. Okay, but the cons are that I need to write script to synchronize. So then if you use standard site with two nodes and a shared resource, if you publish here in one node, it will automatically be available in all of them. But you see, they have this shared configuration, shared storage. What happens if you lose connectivity to ConfigStore? Has anybody experienced this when you lost connection to ConfigStore and suddenly your site got reset and you lost all the definition? You're smiling? Okay. It's traumatic. It's just suddenly, the site definition lost. And it has to happen because if we don't know what are the security settings, we cannot just keep the site open, So the security definition is here. If this is lost, site will reset. So make sure that you design the system that it's highly available for the config store. In 10.4, we have options, the read-only, and we'll create a local copy. But nevertheless, if you choose anything shared, make sure that it's available. The next thing about this, you see these machines, they have to talk to each other. They have to talk to each other. And if you have network outages, even temporary, this cluster master will start acting out. It will say, okay, I use the analogy, going to Disneyland with two kids, and suddenly one is missing, and you're a parent. You go into panic, yes? And that's exactly what will happen to our ArcGIS site. It will just temporarily try to figure out how to reset. So connectivity between these two machines and ConfigStore is required. If you have spotty network, this silo is preferred. And clusters, if you need specific workload separations, you can leverage this as well. But from the performance point of view, I just wanted you to understand these two. And I like this one if you can make it work. So load balancing, web adapter versus hardware. Again, this session is about performance. If you do not need web authentication, Windows authentication, you do not need web adapter, hardware load balancer is excellent choice because it's proven technology. You probably have in-house resources, specialists who can manage this. So leverage this if it's appropriate. What else do we need to do when it comes to site design? Well, I already mentioned the network needs to be stable, the config needs to be on an accessible NAS, we need to have enough memory and CPU. But in addition to this, there are some things that we should avoid doing during the working hours. So publishing services, especially high number of services. Publishing is kind of resource-intensive operation, so it's better if you schedule this off-peak hours. The same playing with nodes, removing and adding. Production time is not the time to do that. Make sure that your recycle times are correct. I was at the customer side recently, and they said they have complaints from the police department using their ArcGIS server application. So I look at all the services they're using, and they're all by default recycle at midnight. And that's the time when the police goes and try to catch the bad guys at midnight, not at 9 a.m. So, just keep in mind how you schedule these recycle times. TuneMXD. So when you publish a map service, you know, make sure that the MXD is tuned. The publishing tools currently will not stop you if your service takes 60 seconds to render. It will just publish. It will catch many other errors, but doesn't really have a criteria for performance. It just assumes that you know what you're doing, and it will publish. There is a preview window. You can click on it, and I recommend that each of you do, so you will get the time, exactly the estimate, what will be the performance of this map when you publish. When you publish services, set instances correctly. So again, let's go back to my freeway analogy, these toll booths, yes? If you know that there will be 10 concurrent cars and you want them to go as fast as possible, the best solution is to have 10 toll booths ready. They're all staffed and they're waiting and the 10 cars are coming and they're being processed. Now, you can have one toll booth, and then when cars come, you just, you know, staff the rest of them, and it will be a little bit delay. So if you have these 10 employees, and they're sitting there, and they have a choice of either staffing the toll booths or just sitting and playing cards, wouldn't you say, all of you guys, each of you staff the toll booth, and when the traffic comes, it will be ready? The same with the WebGIS. If you have memory, enough memory to create these min instances, for example, 10 min, then create 10. Pre-configure all these processes. That will be ready. Make sense? Now, keep in mind is if you have resources, because each process requires memory, and if you have many services, you might run out of RAM. So you need to prioritize. And we will help you later, you know, what tools to use to prioritize. One way is to identify unused services. So if you have 100 services, chances are that a big chunk of them are not being used, and we can reduce these instances. And monitor resources. The good news is that all these things are easy for you to monitor through many tools. One of them is system monitor that we use in professional services. So you can go to this line, this URL, and you can preview how we do this. And Frank will later do a demo, so you will have familiarity. Hosting server. How many of you are using data store hosting servers for publishing services? Anybody? Okay, a few of you. I like this solution very much because it's lightweight and you can publish lots of services. But I want, it's not really performance, but it's just a caution that, you know, this should be authoritative data. If you start publishing authoritative data to data store as CSV, you will lose track of what is authoritative data. So do not be tempted to switch from regular services because for authoritative data. Publishing strategy. Again, I try to give you prescription on the best practices. So the best practices to publish one feature, one service, and multiple layers and portal, active, proposed, and was. What happens that it's one feature, many services, and that requires more resources, more moving parts, more administration, more licenses. I talk about we require, for system to perform, we need to allocate enough resources, CPU, RAM, memory, network, perhaps disk. So what are the typical? CPU is number one. Most of our operations are CPU bound. So that's why it's our primary interest. We want to monitor CPU. If we run out of CPU, performance will degrade. Memory, when we're dealing with large number of services, we need to ensure that we have enough memory. If we run out of virtual memory, the machine, the server, the operating system will just simply crash. So if you want to test this theory, just go and start right-clicking publishing services. Publish, 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 unless you run out of memory and it will not be pretty. disk when we're dealing with imagery or synchronization. How many of you are dealing with collector? Anybody collector? Okay. Do people take pictures and they want to upload, synchronize? Well, if not, they probably will. So now when all these hundreds, perhaps a thousand users are uploading these pictures to the server, you might have a disk synchronization problem. It's not enough disk because it's just like loading 1,000 files at the same time. So it has nothing to do specifically with collector, just common sense. You can't upload that many files at the same time. Network, if you have ArcMap, specifically desktop, is very sensitive about desktop latency going to the database. Virtualization. That topic usually takes me a little bit longer because... Because years ago, when we were just dealing with physical machines, and they were small, and there was not enough CPU and memory, and we had to be very careful about how we designed the system. But then everything sped up, and we have these big machines, lots of RAM, you know, and CPU. And we enjoyed that just for a short moment until the virtualization came to the picture. So now, the names of the consolidation, we virtualize everything, and then you move back, literally back ages, where you're just getting a sliver of the resources. And all the things that were like, oh yeah, you know, 10 gigs of RAM, yeah, I can have it. Now suddenly, it's hard to get. Hard to get this memory and CPU and network because your IT department consolidates all of it. And using my, you know, New York City deli analogy, this ham sandwich is not as big as it used to be. It's kind of a little tiny, you know. They still call this ham sandwich. They might charge you a little bit less because it's a virtual ham sandwich, but it's still, it's a ham sandwich. And you as a GIS admin, you just wonder, is this a ham sandwich or it's just a shadow of the ham sandwich? Yes, it's a shadow of the ham sandwich. And how do you know that? You don't. You don't. You literally have to take somebody's word for that or use monitoring tools and testing tool to say, well, let me just compare these two sandwiches. This is not a ham sandwich. No, this doesn't even come to the ham sandwich. Okay, memory. It's challenging because you see the average process can be half a gig or a gig or 2 gigs GP or geocoding. So it's something that it's not easy for us to quickly estimate how much memory we need. If you're dealing with these type of services and high number, you need to have some tools to assess what is the average size of your processes. So if you have a new solution and you're asking yourself a question, well, how many machines do I need? How many CPUs? How much memory and network? There are several tools to calculate that. They all take inputs like models. System Designer is a tool that's developed by us, and it does lots of cool stuff. You know, it produces Visio automatically, some charts, really impressive. But the one thing that it has, you know, it has this intelligence in a sense that Frank and his team, they run tests and they publish these models into the System Designer, and you can use this as a drop-down and say, oh, I have a feature service. Well, let's see if they have a model for feature service. And we have hundreds of them. And we run these tests periodically for each release, for 10.3, 10.4, and it will be 10.5. So we always add this. And if we have no other information, if there is no existing data, we would use these models as a starting point. But we much prefer empirical data, something to use from your existing. And here's the output. It produces, you know, all this stuff in terms of how much hardware do you need. I would love to give you a demo, but I think that then we have... We might not have time. We have really good demos for other tools. If you're interested, please talk to me afterwards. Okay. Now, performance testing. What is the first thing that we do when it comes to performance testing? We don't. We don't just test performance. We tune the system. We need to tune the system. How do we tune the system? Where do we start? Do we start at the bottom, or do we start at the top, or somewhere in the middle? I know how it's done in many cases, because I've been there. So when there's a performance problem, what do we do? Well, let's just call DBA, a network guy, and ask them, you know, so how is it looking today? And they're like, yeah, looking fine, you know. You know, if you're insistent, you set up a meeting, there's a round table, and everybody comes, and they go around the table. It's like, so network good, database good, storage good, everything is good. But why is there a problem with the web application? Okay, so we need to profile each operation. We need to empower you GIS admins. We need to evidence and talking points so you can go and be effective in your discussion with the IT. Because if we just give them ArcGIS server logs and something about config store or instances and they have no idea what it means, they're not going to act on that. But if we give them information package that they can relate to or even reproduce the problem outside of the complex Esri platform, oh, that's gold. That's gold. They will act on this. And I will give you a real use cases how I talk to your IT. Okay, but before we do this, let's talk about the tuning. So we start here. If you have a performance problem and the phone is ringing, go to the users and say, can somebody just click on the button? Show me what it is. I want to show what it is. That's what I would do. If you invite me to help you on your side, that would be the first thing. It's like, nice to meet you, managers. Can I talk to the users? I want to talk to the users. I want to see what the problem is. And when we reproduce problem, we use simple tools like Fiddler or a Chrome. How many of you are familiar with Fiddler or F12? Yes, so you're using this. You can do this. You can easily do the first part. If you can record that and identify the longest request in a Fiddler, no knowledge required. All you need to know is the numbers. So if the number is high, it's bad. And you determine, okay, this request is taking 5 seconds. You manage to narrow down the problem from the application with many buttons and many web pages to one map service, in my case. Big progress, big progress. If you sent us this Fiddler, you narrow down our search and we can probably be very effective remotely even. But that doesn't end here. We have, it says map server, that's an export map. So for those of you who are familiar with ArcGIS server, you recognize, oh yeah, I know this map service. This map service has been giving us heartburn, you know, for a long time. And it would be good to go back and analyze, well, how frequent this problem is. So we can go to ArcGIS server stats, and as of 10.3, ArcGIS server produces these stats. And you can go historically. There is a resolution, typically it's 30 minutes. You can find this information. It might be a little bit challenging if you're dealing with 100 services, but it's a really good tool. Another tool is that we're using, it's System Log Parser, and we parse logs. And the reason that we like that tool, because it just gives us information the way we want, and we designed this tool to get the information really quickly. We can write ArcPy, and we can rely on other statistics. All of it is possible. But when we're on site, and the time is ticking, and we have 3 days to fix the problem, we cannot get a Swiss knife to assemble. You know, we want a Swiss knife immediately ready, you know, and that's our Swiss knife. It's ready to go. It's not the IKEA that somebody drops the package, and you're like open and just assembling something. There's no time for this. So all these tools that we have, it's not that they have something super extra new. They're kind of designed for efficiency because that's our day job. We go and we have a couple of days to fix problems. And we're dealing with 100 services, multiple environments. There's no time for us to playing with, you know, spreadsheet correlation. We need something the way we need. And our Cadillac, of course, is System Monitor. The value of that is that collects the information all the time. So you can quickly preview data in the past month and past weeks. And there's a lot of things, including system and GIS related. Okay, So let's say that we use any of these tools and we determine, yes, this is a problem. This service is a problem. So after a map service, there is a... What's behind map service? What's behind map service? ArcMap document, yes? So ArcMap document, mxdperfstat. How many of you have used mxdperfstat? Okay, very good, very good. mxdperfstat can... Oh, by the way, how much progress we have made so far? There was a big web application. Now we're dealing with one MXD. Big progress, big progress. And if we profile this MXD, it says, oh, out of all the layers, this layer is very slow. Okay, another progress. We narrow down because this layer is just a table. And we can stop, and we can stop. And if you can get to this level by yourself, and as you see, there's just a bunch of tools. So you can click, and you sent us this report. That would be super helpful. We can act very quickly and help you diagnose what the problem is. All right, but some of you might be kind of, maybe you're a part-time DBA, or maybe you're a DBA. And it says, there's database CPU something, CPU, CPU. And when you read this recommendation, it says, run DBMS trace, run DBMS trace. Even though you might not be a DBA, you might not even understand what it is, but it's telling you, call your DBA and ask, this tool is telling me to run the Oracle trace. All right. So DBA says, fine, you know, just give me the username and I will run it. And the DBA runs and produces this output. And of course, now you understand everything, yes? No, it's still a little bit cryptic, but it confirms. He's like, yeah, we see. This query is slow. This query is very slow. But why is slow? Well, we're very close. So to answer this, you need to have this execution plan. And when you understand well, you know, how to interpret this, it really means that the spatial index was not used. Okay, now it's the time to light the cigar. Because when you know the spatial index is not used, it's either you didn't create or there is a bug or something. But awesome job, awesome job. Now, I do not expect most of you to get to this level, but some of you could easily, and it's my hope after this workshop that you can get to this level, and you're just cutting down the time to troubleshoot your system by a big factor. And that's really the spirit of this presentation. So we want to share how we do things, what tools we're using, and we're not that smart, you know, we just have right tools, you know. How do we go about this testing? As I said, we need to start with the infrastructure. Then the GIS services is our engine. And only then we need to test the application. What's required for testing? Well, you need to kind of know how to test. And you might think, whoa, that's complicated. I will give you a demo in a moment, and you will be the judge of it. But I really hope that you walk out saying, oh, yeah, I can do this. I can do the testing. Now, can you tune? Can you validate configuration? Maybe not. Maybe not. But if you can just test and produce results, we will have something to talk about, yes? And we can say, oh, yeah, you need to do the tuning or validate configuration, and we'll make recommendation. So there are many tools. The tool that we develop, we use internally. It's kind of aware of the GIS services that we have. So it recognizes how to handle map, feature service, OGC, but we still can test application. You can use this tool to test any solution, not even GIS. You can go to Fiddler, record the Fiddler, save it as a HAR file, import, and we'll play back, whether it's a GIS or not GIS. But it can really understand the GIS engines, and that's the value. There are many tools, and I'm sure you have it. LoadRunner, it's the Cadillac of all the tools, but it comes at a price. Not only the dollar, but also you need to learn, and you have to have dedicated team. JMeter, very popular because it's free. Still, you need to know a little bit. But notice there's one thing, the GIS data generation. When I give a demo, you will understand what I'm talking about. None of these tools are aware of. It's not like these tools are connecting to ArcGIS server and say, oh, I know where Europe is. No, they don't. They just test whatever you input. So in a moment, I'll demo this. We like it. It's free. It's part of our consulting practice. When you test, always ask yourself, you know, what's the objective? So it shouldn't be a journey. It should be a clear objective. We want to understand the bottlenecks. What's the capacity of our system? Maybe we need to demonstrate performance. And a quick demo. Does anybody have any questions so far? I know I'm going fast, but there's a lot of cool stuff coming, so I want to make sure that Frank has time. Yeah. So in 10.4, they reduce the communication between nodes. So now they're not talking to each other. Only the master is sending requests. Before there, they were talking to each other. So we're making improvement. And in 10.5, there will be more improvements. But if any of you are still at 10.3 or lower, oh yes, they're chatty. They're chatty all the time. So I think they probably demoed the latest. And just really quickly, okay, very quick demo. So when you install a system monitor, system test for web, you can connect to ArcGIS server, and it sees all these services. So if you say, okay, I want to run a test against, I'll close it so it's not confusing. Close this. Okay, so I want to test the engine, the sample word city engine. There is no application, but the engine is there. So we preview. And now, all other tours, without seeing the map, they test this area. Because they just don't know, you know, unless somebody gives them correct X and Y. So just guess, what would be performance of zooming into the blue ocean? It would be phenomenal performance. You know, you would be surprised. But that's not how we should approach that. When we are testing, for example, application is for European users, we should select this area, yes? Not Pacific, but in Europe. Okay, so that's the first step. Now let's see how long does it take. My challenge is to finish the test in 60 seconds. So let's see. I select the area. I do a simple map. It's my first test. I'm not going to analyze the scales. I will use all of them. I'll close, produces the output. I create a test. I click, and in a moment it will show all these steps. So you remember when I had step one, step two, so this is step one, and it goes up to step three, and I click, okay, I'm good, and I start the load test, and it's running, and it's running, and it will produce the result. And it will produce the result. And if it's a good result, that's awesome. You validated your environment. If it's bad, we have a test result with additional statistics from the operating system that we can quickly diagnose where the problems are. So I don't mean to trivialize that because it's a very simple test. But I hope that you see that most of you can do that. You know, with a little review of the documentation, you can do this.
So just a quick recap on what Andrew just did, because it's quite a bit in that 60 seconds. He actually selected an area, he generated data, he created a web test and a load test in less than 60 seconds. We've been on site and we've seen groups struggle with this for months. And one group was about 3 months, and Andrew went on site and within 45 minutes, he had all the tests written and executed with results. So it's very effective to get things done quickly.
Yes,
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Now, it gets even better. You can rerun them manually, or you can schedule them and send the results to the system monitor, and every day you can results of your solutions. So every day you can say, we're doing well. And if you have complaints from users and your test results are not reflecting that, well, there's some discrepancy, something for us to investigate. So ongoing continuous monitoring is the best practice. Let's talk about the monitoring because it's related. So why do we have monitoring tools? Our experience show when we go on site, we're dealing with this typical situation. Multiple administrators, multiple tools. The outputs are in different formats, and it's hard to correlate network and CPU and ArcGIS server and other related statistics. And the key is that you, ArcGIS administrator, you do not have access to these tools. You do not have access to these tools. It's a little bit ironic. How many of you are supporting GeoDatabase, ArcSDE? Anybody? Any Oracle? Anybody has Oracle? Okay. Do you have all the permissions? Can you start tracing? Yeah, of course you don't. Yes. Because you're in charge of this database, and you have no basic permissions. Okay. So then you need to go to the DBA, say, can you please run the trace or run this query for me? And it's challenging, and it's challenging for you, and it's challenging for us. The pressure is on us when we go and do the consulting, and we don't have many days to do this. We cannot go through these permissions, and we need access now so we can figure out what the problem is. So that's why we have this tool, because really there are many tools, many excellent tools. You know, and we don't really strive to have a better one. But we know system and we know GIS, and we would like you to use that at the minimum as a reference implementation. So if you have Microsoft, we have HP, you have other tools, we're not saying that our tool is better, you know. No, we're saying, look at what we have, look at what we think that we need to collect, and if you can integrate to your tools, do it, and you will be in a good shape. Now, the integration might be costly, so you need to assess the level of effort. Maybe at the end of this exercise, you say, like, you know, we're actually, why to do it? We can use this tool. But at this point in our conversations, I want you to understand everything that we collect is we learn from the field. You know, Frank and I were not developers. We're consultants. It just happens that we learn how to code. So we go inside and we figure out, like, oh, yeah, we got to know this virtual memory because this virtual memory kicked our butt so many times that we need to monitor. Because indeed, if you run out of virtual memory, the server will crash. And so we need to watch for that. So we edit and we add these features. The key for us is this. End-to-end and continuous. I think these are the two attributes that I want to stress. You know, I came up with this piece, phrase, it's kind of, end-to-end. It's not just, you know, if you're in charge of ArcGIS server, you're impacted by the network, by the database, by other things. So you need to monitor these elements. You probably also need to monitor web server. I mentioned network and hardware. And that's really our message to you. If you want to be as effective as we, seasoned consultants, you need access and you need tools. And only then you can be effective. So let's keep going and understand what do we mean by this. There are a couple of things that we want to know quickly. If I say, okay, well, how many machines do you have on your site? And what is the CPU spec rate of this? And how many are RAM? And what's the virtual? And you have 10 machines, it would be like, oh, okay, wait, I'll call somebody. No, we want now quickly configuration because I'm just looking at this as information. And there is resource utilization, usage trends. So if you say, we've been fine until the last month, and I was like, okay, do you know what happened? Like maybe there are more users on your system. Is there anything that you can give me? So we want that. Measure performance, measure uptime. These are the things that we need to quickly understand. And we came up with this maturity matrix. It's not a scorecard. This is not to rank our users. It helps us to recommend the activity. So if you are not doing any type of design capacity planning, testing, monitoring, you know, we see this as a, there are plenty of opportunity for improvement. We definitely want everybody to be at the level 4, where you not only design things, but and test and monitor, but you you conduct the trend analysis and quantification. You actually look at the report, maybe weekly report, and say, "Oh, I think we're the utilization consistently has been going up." And if we use the regression, probably next month we need to think about how to add more resources or more machines or handle something. So so we use this as a high level assessment. Okay. Now, Frank will give you a demo, and we really focus on use cases. This demo is not about the tool, but you know, what is it that we're looking at to identify quickly? So, Frank, go ahead. You.
Okay, we're going to take a quick look at basic dashboards built out from monitoring and metrics to give you an idea of what you can get and how valuable it can be for you running your organization, identifying problems and finding and fixing things. And we'll go through a few use cases as we do that. When we first take a look at this dashboard, if it was brand new, you would just have one corner here, and you have to develop these. These are custom made through a desktop, sort of like report builder. So if we clicked in here, we would log in, and what we would see is all of our systems. And you can break these up into groups like this. This could be dev, or it could be tests, it could be production. But in any case, you can kind of see there's a red and green here, indicating red, of course, indicating bad. So if you came in and you had a lot of these groups, you would see one of these red. You would pop it open. You would say, oh, the broad category system is in trouble. Which system is in trouble? Let's open it up. There it is. Now we can actually identify and look at the problem right here. And in this case, it's a CPU. It's not a real problem. I just created this alert for the demo. And then you can actually observe the real data right now. And you can actually observe this for longer periods of time. In addition to the system monitoring, you can investigate processes. You can add ArcGIS servers. It will list all of these and begin scanning all of the throughput and busy time and the types of things for tuning. And we'll take a look at later a better report for this. This one is just the operational view of making sure that everything is working. We can add database queries. In our case, for SDE, monitoring the A tables, the D tables, the compression. We also have a category of HTTP, which we use for uptime. Examples for uptime would be creating something simple that would go through your entire stack. So, for example, a request that went through your web adapter, then to your ArcGIS server, then all the way to your database. If this consistently performs well and consistently returns, it's a signal that you can use as uptime. You, of course, may choose multiple points to quantify that uptime. If you're working with Citrix, and you have Citrix farms, this might be very important. So you would register each of the Citrix machines here, and you could begin watching them over time. Make sure that they're load balanced correctly. Amazon, if you're working with the cloud or you're beginning to think about going to the cloud, a big aspect here is the performance and also the management aspect of it. How many instances do I have running? How much storage am I using? And things like that. And finally, extensibility. Here we see that you can extend System Monitor very easily through Python. And in our case here, we're monitoring several extensions. Actually, this is just one. But this is for license management, and we'll show you a correlated report in a minute that will give you a lot of information quickly. So,
is this all out of the box? Where would you install this on the server or on the desktop?
Well, this one would require, there are a few options. Andrew will probably go through all of them, but if you were just building it on site, if you have a moderate site, a medium site, like let's say less than 25 servers, and maybe 5 ArcGIS servers, you might need 4 cores. You might need 50 to 100 gigs of memory, disk space, and it would easily handle monitoring that. You should never install any of these components or monitoring components, and at least in my opinion, should not be on the target machines because they consume resources. And so if you have some monitor agent that you have on your machine and it's eating away at one of your cores, well, if you have a 4-core, that's roughly 25% of your resources. I'm not sure that's a great expenditure of resource unless you're getting real value from that monitoring.
So I want to repeat, you did not install this on the ArcGIS server. But it's a good question. There are tools that require agent to be installed on every machine to be monitored. And what I've observed is these agents consume one CPU. So if you install this type of monitoring tool on ArcGIS server with 4 cores, it will consume 25% of your ArcGIS server license, which is quite expensive, bill to pay. So everything has to be remote. Nothing runs on the production system. You get everything. Well, you get everything, but you need to configure extensions. All the others, it's out of the box. So if you want to monitor a machine, you just need to provide the machine name. The same with ArcGIS Server. You just, what is the ArcGIS Server URL admin? There's really nothing else. But if you want to build custom extension with a custom logic, you need to build it using .NET, Python, and then just schedule. Yes?
Any particular requirements for communication with the WLI have to be running on the server or a particular protocol?
Yeah, so we had a workshop on Saturday and we went through all the details. So I have slides and it specifies, but for Windows machine, we're using WMI to connect to. Now, in Amazon, WMI is turned off by default, so we use Amazon counters that gets this information. For Linux, we use SSH. Yes, some port need to be open, but the communication from these machines is to our web server, so as long as you can reach our port 80, that's all we need. Yes? So the story is a little bit not as clear. There's a version 1, and I'll show you when I get back that it's available. You can download. What we're demoing is the version 3, and it's right now it's not available for download. There's an email where you can contact us, how to make it accessible. So we're working out on the business model for that. For now, version 3 comes with professional services. And if you're interested, I'll be happy to talk to you. I encourage all of you. It's very easy to acquire monitoring tools. It's very easy to create a lot of data. It's much harder to create information. I have no doubt that if we give you this tool, you will create this catalog, because it really looks like catalog. But the real objective is to turn this into information that will guide you to actions. And for that, it requires a little bit understanding of GIS, your system. So that's a good segue, Frank. So this looks like catalog, and it's very helpful because you can quickly see, red and green. But can I have like an arc map? Can I build a map? Can I just pick things and build what I want?
Yes, you can. When we install System Monitor, you get a desktop application that helps you build reports and collate servers. So you may have 100 servers, but you don't want to see all the servers together. You want to collate them based on some natural organization. for example, production or dev, or maybe you want to see all your web servers together, or you want to see all your ArcGIS servers together. So for this, we provide custom reports. And through the broad categories, we allow you to collate the collection of items that you want. In this particular case, you're viewing all the processors for about 10 machines. And you can see quickly that the data starts getting out of control because we are observing this quite a lot. You're seeing a lot of data. You can glean from this, from all these servers, that most of them are under 25% because we're looking here and nothing is looking too extreme. But we also provide statistics. I don't think I've seen this in many other tools. We are sampling so often that we'll need to summarize this statistically. And so what we typically do is scan across here, we'll start sorting, and we'll see, okay, this is on average the busiest one, and then we can start scanning down to see what the impact is on the server in general over the time window that has been selected. We can also observe the maximums, we can observe the minimums, and we can observe the range of statistics. P99% of the samples for this particular machine are under 33%. 95 are under 30.
Well, so, that's very helpful, but it might be a little bit complicated for some of us. Can we have just a simple report? Just give me the list of unused services. Can this be as simple as that?
Yes, it can. As a matter of fact, we have several tailored reports for ArcGIS Server to cover different problems. One would be throughput. Which services are being used? Here we see over a time window that this service, the Sample World Cities, has been used 1,000 times. And we also see another service here, Test. This is one of my tests. Used 240. So at the top, we see that there are a total of 1,200 hits in the time window. Two services used out of 24. So what this is telling us is which services are being used in the time window. This is a short time frame, but Andrew has produced an Excel that will scan a month, 2 months, 3 months of data, allowing you to observe the more popular services. So then you can identify, can you tweak or tune the pooling? You know, if you have one that's just using, it's very popular, well, you'll want to open the gates a bit. If it's totally not used at all, you'll want to turn it down. And so we'll take a look at that now, the unused services. So in our case, we have 22 unused services in the time window out of 24. So we're not using very many of our services. It might be time for me to retire a few of these.
Well, this is really cool. So you can see there's a lot of useful information for administrators. How about if you're a manager? Can System Monitor help you with anything?
Well, sure. Just looking at these reports, the manager might be saying, how do I optimize the resources for what we have? And one way is to retire services and to gain memory back from these portal-type applications that use a lot of memory and have a lot of services. And another is to say, how much work is being done? How much work is actually being conducted over time? So if you could articulate that, if your manager came to you or his manager's manager, and you said, well, we served up 100,000 map services. We served up 27,000 image services, some GPs.
I see. I meant the manager who cares more about the licenses and stuff like that.
Licenses. Well, in addition to resources and counting and throughput, there are other factors that managers might be interested in, and that is the license usages. So here we're tracking License Manager in an extension, and we can actually see the total licenses available for ArcInfo here. And we see that 18% are consumed in the time window selected. So you might run this report over a month to find out your high watermarks for license usage. Another usage pattern for this is we're often at the top of our license usage and we need somebody to log off. And we do have the capability, although we don't always expose it, to show the users that are logged in. There may be some aspect that people shouldn't see this, but managers may be interested in that.
And if I have public application, can I see where my users are, where they're coming from?
Yes, it's possible to configure a map. Once we start using System Log Parser, which was already introduced earlier, which I hope everyone downloads and uses because it's free, and it's an introduction to starting looking at the metrics. these metrics here are actually from IIS logs, where we take a look at the client IPs, and then we reverse look up those IPs, and we begin charting them over time. This map is telling us, giving us a nice view of where our hits are coming from, but we'll also get a discrete table. You know, 69% of the hits are from the United States in the time window selected. We can also build out maps for the United States. We could show the actual hits. We can summarize the statistics. We can summarize the IPs that are coming to our site. And we can actually collate it with other aspects that we're also monitoring. For example, HTTP and ArcGIS.
Thank you, Frank. That's very good. So you see, you know, when we talk about the monitoring, we're not talking about administrators and CPU and memory. We're also talking about the usage and for managers. Our next area that we're focusing is consolidated administration. So if you have all the scripts, you can execute them as tasks through System Monitor, and we're working on this. It's ready. We'll be ready next week, and we're looking forward to sharing this with you.
I want to just expand on what he just said. Imagine that you could monitor your automated scripts to compress, and you want to make sure they ran. You want to have some feedback that they ran, and then you'll want to actually interrogate the results to prove that it's making a difference. You could actually configure all of that in an extension and make that work as a task, maybe on Sunday night or
each
evening.
Very well. Well, thank you, Frank. This was really good. I have a few slides. I really want to share with you the real use case from users, so you have a sense that what we're talking about is not just theoretical and us showing off with some cool web pages and tools. If you want to evaluate, this is the login. And the next page, you can get the rest of the tools, including the version 1 download. So this is the page when you can download the previous version. And that's how you can get the System Log Parser, MXD Perfstat, and all other tools. All right. So let's go through some use cases. Number one is we experienced CPU spike. Later on, we figure out that there was antivirus. But I want you to understand what will happen when there is a CPU spike. This is a CPU spike. Well, the CPU spike impacts performance. Suddenly, the response time goes up. And you have a strong correlation. You have a strong correlation. So the spike caused performance degradation. You know, mystery solved. Antivirus. Turn it off. Exclude certain directories. Not always correlation equates causation, but in many cases, it's a very strong. The next case, suddenly you have more users. So you know the user load comes in, performance degrades, you receive the email, mystery is solved. Now, we can't solve these things without monitoring. We need to have all the statistics. And most of you have, most of these tools would not have load, would not have response time. They would have probably CPU utilization. So we really need to have the user load information. The next thing is, how do we have effective conversation with IT? Well, the best way is to come up with reproducible case outside of Esri software. How do we do this? We put a file. We put a file on the web server. We put a file on the ArcGIS server, and we construct these URLs. So you see, this URL goes to the web server. This URL goes to web adapter. This URL goes directly 6080. That's how these arrows indicate. So now, in my case, all these times are equal. And if I have this, I can say for sure there is no network latency between my client and web server. Now, if this was more like this, and I am dealing with the same file, that would indicate that there is some network path issue. That doesn't make sense. So we do this all the time. we use file download and sample word city to test your system outside of your complex solution. If we can reproduce this problem, that will be better. All right. We have to monitor network latency throughout the time. It's not enough to just analyze this for 1 second and conclude, oh, we don't have network problems. Because that's how most IT and network, they just look at the stats for the past 10 seconds and they might be, or 10 minutes, and might be here. We need to have for a long time. It's a real customer, and they say, we have performance problems. And I said, well, you know, how bad is your performance problem? And they say, we don't know. So I set it up, and this is true application. Response time at 60 seconds. As I can see, they have serious performance problems. I mean, serious performance problem. So how do we deal with this? It's just, it's so much, you know, it's hard to figure out where to start. So I like to analyze this. You know, these charts are very nice graphically, but I like to have the tabular information. And we have different reports that quickly help us with Excel. And the slow application, actually, it was connected to ArcGIS server. So these are times measured at the ArcGIS server. So I immediately answered the question, that's not their network. It's something at the ArcGIS server. And as I mentioned, they had memory problems. And this is the list of unused services. But you see, many of these services have min instances 6 and 3. And that's just chewing up the memory. So they were good candidates to free up the memory. Network, we use a different ping. You see, it's just it's chaotic. And that slide was instrumental for me to talk to the IT. When they saw the times, when they saw the slide, they get back to me and say, okay, I think we do have a network problem. And they started digging, and they figure out that one of the VMs was misconfigured. So without that chart, I wouldn't be able to convince them. What else do we have here? ArcGIS server instances, they didn't have the toll booths. They didn't have enough toll booths. So you see it's 0000 toll booths available. Well, if 0 toll booths, their performance is slow. And we're talking about 2,000 services. So it's very easy to put together a slide, and it's like small table. But these charts and Excel reports were very long, and these tools help us quickly. So we have 2 minutes. Really quickly, system log parser, that's the same thing. It just produces slides, it produces Excel in a format that we can quickly identify the priority, which services are up. This is the slowest service, so it's right here. The instances, it's analogous to what we were discussing in a moment. When we have sites with multiple nodes, you want to make sure that they are balanced correctly, and you see the machines are not balanced. And finally, there is something. If you have tiles or hosted feature services, the information is not available in ArcGIS server logs. The only way you can get info is when you analyze web logs. In our case, it's IIS logs. And System Monitor has hooks to everything because that's our philosophy, end-to-end and continuous. And only then we can understand how to address your problems. Just quickly summary. Just remember, manage performance through entire project lifecycle. Understand that there are some simple actions you can take, you know, design, capacity, performance testing, monitoring. Again, this is where you can preview our tools. And it's time for questions. And we have... Okay, yes, we will be here as long as it takes, until 5:30, the bus takes off. Yes, sir. Well, when you build vector tile, even though it's much faster than regular cache, you still need resources for that. And when you serve them, it will have less impact on the environment. So you pay the cost of building the vector tiles. But you cannot apply vector tiles to every scenario. There are some features that are not available. So if you say, I need to be able to click and identify, well, then you need to do other things. Yes, it's a different cache, different way of accessing cache. Yes, sir. Say again, I'm sorry. So the question is, can you filter requests based on the map service type? Absolutely, absolutely. So all stats from ArcGIS server logs and ArcGIS server stats, yes, there are. They have this. You know the type, folder, and the name. UI?
No, that's in. You're talking about testing, the usability of something?
Yeah. So the functional testing, whether things work or not, it's outside of our objective of performance. Now, if you say, we have such a rich web application, the performance of the Chrome web browser becomes an issue, that's slightly different approach, different focus. Everything that we talked is about server. So anything with a, you know, if you're Chrome, and we will measure the network, the web service, ArcGIS server, but including the time on your web server, on your web browser like Chrome. But in most cases, this is not an issue unless you are storing all the data from feature service. So you say, I want to download, 1,000 features, and I want to massage this in the web browser. Yeah, it will be a little bit slower, but you don't need tools for that because it's only single user, so you can... You can manually profile that and subtract the server part and make sense? Yes?
It's not really clear to me how the monitor can monitor the usage of desktop. Does it link to the Flex Manager?
So we monitor, if you have Citrix server or remote desktop, if your users get desktop through Citrix or remote desktop, then we monitor this machine. We know how many processes are running in remote desktop. If you have users using ArcMap on the local desktop, then we can only monitor their database. We see how many of them are connected to the database. But you're right, we don't monitor actually ArcMap because there's nothing running on their desktop. We could put, collectors on each desktop, but we would have to understand return on investment. What are we trying to...
the reason is the same that you do with Citrix, to find the thresholds before the maximum usage, maximum license needed or something like that. But in fact, you should monitor the license directly, the license manager.
We do, yeah. So the license manager is running somewhere else, and we would monitor regardless whether you use desktop or Citrix.
So you do this?
Yes.
Okay. So
yes, the one that Frank, is this the license?
Two seconds.
When you showed how many ArcGIS licenses are in use, that is a monitoring from the Flex Manager.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
That's exactly what we do.
Okay. That will work with 10.3, it doesn't matter.
That's correct.
It won't matter.
Okay. Anybody else?
Everything in your system in there on the services and all the details, or is it
So System Designer can be used in two ways. The primary objective is capacity, and you should model only operations that are capacity significant. So if you say, my workflow is, I open the map, and I click on identify, and you say, well, do I need to model identify? I say, no, because identify is very light in most cases. So I would focus on the operations that have significant footprint on the resources. Some users use System Designer to document all the workflows. So for them, capacity is not the only objective. They just want to understand all the connectivity and all the operations. Did I answer your question? Is it about how to simplify your workflows for capacity?
Yeah, but actually I would be interested in both. Like, it would be nice to have it. I mean, in the short term, you want to model capacity, but in the long term, you want to get your system modeled so that you can verify that the results you're getting match up with the model, so that when you do something new, you can kind of see.
Well, so System Designer is a design tool, yes, and it takes some inputs. But if you have System Monitor and you collect this information, you can go back to your System Designer and you can use these calibrated models. Because the input to System Designer is the user load and the models. So you start with assumptions. Then you go live, you run the System Monitor, and says, oh, you know, I inputted 100 users, but I only see 50. Then you go back to System Designer, put 50, and then you say, I assume that the maps will be, you know, 1 second, but I see here they're only half a second. So you go to the System Designer, half a second, and you recalculate capacity, and then you should see similar utilization in System Designer as in your production from System Monitor. It makes sense? And the value of that is that you have a model that closely follows your real time, your real production. So if you say, well, what do I need to do if I need to add 1,000 users or new applications? So now you have this blueprint that it's well calibrated, and you just add these numbers and it will come up with the fairly accurate recommendations. That's why I'm glad you brought it up, because I see all these tools connected. Yes, what is it, Bruce, that it's a continuum. It's not an event. It's a continuum, you know, and that's how we need to approach this.
But you should also take a little care in your evaluation of your capacity planning. Let's say you made a capacity plan. The goodness or badness of this capacity plan isn't rated on how close you came to it. It's how successful you were in deploying that system. So, for example, you didn't know anything about these workflows. You used a capacity tool. You used some estimates. And you came up with a professional estimate for your deployment. Now, to expect that those would land, like, on the moon perfect, it would only happen probably in a very small number of cases. It would happen if you made zero error in the input and you had zero error inside of your benchmark models. And so there's error induced use here. And the point is to use that capacity tool to have a reasonable understanding of what you would like to acquire to be successful. Andrew mentioned it already, that once you have information, once you have a working system, monitoring is better because you immediately get the status of the system. And then you can begin to reevaluate using testing, using real models from your data.
Yes. So the practical approach to this is just put something together, quick calculate, and look at the number. And if the number is million, you know something is not right. If the number is 7, they're like, okay, you know, I probably will buy 8-core or 16-core machine anyway, so I might as well just assume that that's good enough, you know. to be very practical, because the capacity planning is not about accurate estimate of, you know, a 2 decimal points. It's not about you, you know, if you produce capacity planning and it produces 8 and somebody else produces 7, and then later on in the production turns out to be 9, it doesn't mean that your estimate is superior. All of you won. You got the machine that it's big enough to support the user load. And keep in mind the increments are not in fraction. Increments are 2-core, 4-core, 6-core. So be careful not to become too academic about this capacity. Think about the return on investment. The objective is I need to have enough hardware to support the future load. It's a little bit more challenging with VMs because now your administrators say, like, so is half CPU enough? They can give you half a CPU. And it's like, okay, it's pressure, you know. It's hard for me to, you know. I was hoping that there will be between 8 and 16, you know, but half is... Well, the main difference is that the physical machine, the VMs are shared resource, yes? So you're sharing resources with others. Physical, you have a dedicated machine to yourself. When you can just draw the conclusion, you know, the moment that we're sharing things is, am I getting the fair share? It's really about the configuration of VMs. There's nothing inherently wrong with VMs, absolutely not. You can configure them that it will perform on par with physical machines, but you need to give a little bit to hypervisor. The challenge that we were facing is that now you have these IT managers that they can reduce the cost. They can actually make this ham sandwich smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and it will keep doing this until you stand up and say, I want a real ham sandwich. Because their responsibility is to reduce the cost. Their responsibility is not to make sure that you're getting best performance. No, they will...
Everything you're saying is true, but I mean, in the future, you're going to get VMs, most yes. likely. You probably won't be getting, be able to ask for physical hard resources unless you're paying for them in your own business or acquiring them in such a way.
But as you pointed out, you're losing these out-of-the-box features of disaster recovery and backup and recovery, and they can move your VM and, you know, in no time to any location. So I would not try to resist that technology. It's more to understand this over-allocation. Like, ask a simple question. We bought this physical machine, 16-core machine, that I used to have for myself. How many other applications now are sharing this machine? And if the IT says, oh, yeah, no, we actually sliced it into 50 servers, you're like, really? Like, you took one server and you turn it into 50 servers? What kind of ham sandwich is that? Yeah. No, it's not. That's the challenge. So I hope that this workshop give you talking points. You can go and ask IT, can you tell me what is our over-allocation factor? And you will see. IT like, okay, I think you know something.
Yeah, they need to learn too. Yes. IT needs to learn not to over-allocate, especially on critical systems. You wouldn't want to over-allocate and then put an emergency system on a virtual machine, and then all of a sudden those resources aren't there. So you can't treat things uniformly. You have to actually tell them you need those dedicated resources. No sharing. You need those
if
resources.
If you have performance problems.
If I'm not using them, they're sitting there doing nothing.
That's right, and they will challenge you. They say, why should we give you two dedicated cores if they're sitting and doing nothing? And your answer could be, I am running a fire station. I'm sitting and playing cards, waiting for fire. But when the fire comes, I do not want to go and look for a truck. I want these two cores to be available. And if you can convince them, you know, you say, you know, we're in the we have hurricane application. So if there are no hurricanes, there is no load. But if there is a hurricane, there will be load. And it's not the time for me to call you and negotiate what I need. Have talking points with the IT. It's not that they don't mean well. Their primary objective is to reduce the cost. And they're doing a good job, and they will continue doing this until we'll come back and explain why we need dedicated machines. And the first thing you need to be assess, do you have a problem? Do you have a performance problem? Because if you don't have a problem, we shouldn't be going into, you know, are you allocating these VMs fairly? Do I get my slice because we bought 16 core and my department is paying for this? And, well, I mean, this is a different discussion. It's mainly, do you have performance problems? And if you do, the usual suspects. Is my VM over-allocated? You know, do I have enough capacity? And are my services tuned? All the things that we were talking about.